Everyone's experience is unique to them. This podcast contains the personal story, experience, and opinions of the speaker, rather than that of Breast Cancer Now. Hello and welcome to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. This is a series that shares the stories of people who have had breast cancer. It's also where you'll hear the voices of our nurses, researchers, and experts who help to provide support for today and hope for the future to anyone affected by breast cancer. Hello, I'm Em, and today I'll be speaking with our Research Communications Officer, Ed. Ed's role at Breast Cancer Now is to help share the news of all the amazing research we fund as a charity. Today we'll be taking a look at just a few recent studies focused on cancer prevention, treatment, and care. Ed, thank you for joining me.
Hello, thank you for having me, Em.
So, to start off with, I wonder if you could tell me a little bit about how Breast Cancer Now's research efforts have been affected over the last year.
Yeah, sure. So during the first wave of the pandemic, many labs were closed for several months, which interrupted many experiments. And during that time, many researchers were still kind of busy working from home where it was possible, writing reports, research publications, planning new projects for when they could get back into the lab. So now many researchers have returned to the labs, and they've kind of had to observe social distancing to keep everyone safe, which means carefully prioritizing and planning their experiments and working in a shift environment to maximize the time in the lab. But, you know, they're keen to keep the research going and moving the science forward.
Yeah. And I think a lot of the work that we fund in particular can be broken into three categories. So that's prevention, treatment, and care. And one of our recent projects focused on prevention. That was the ACT-WELL study. So could you tell me a little bit more about what that entailed?
One big aspect of prevention is ensuring keeping a healthy, like active lifestyle. And this study was supported by us. So we provided the support of finding the volunteers who took part in the study, which was the lifestyle coaches. But yeah, and it was focused on women over 50 who had already gone through the menopause, who are attending NHS breast cancer screening appointments, which is a really good point to kind of talk about the risks of what the best way is to reduce a person's risk of breast cancer. Mm-hmm. One aspect of this is women who are overweight or obese after the menopause have a higher level of estrogen in their bodies, which may encourage the growth of some breast cancers. And this is because the hormone is also made by fatty tissue. And so the aim of this study was to have a guided program that would help these women maintain weight loss. And it showed some great success in that area.
That's really cool. So how did the process of the study work? So we found this group of women, and you said they're postmenopausal and perhaps at risk due to being overweight or obese. And then what happened from that stage then? How did they interact with these volunteers that Breast Cancer Now found?
Yep. So the program included a volunteer coach, which was provided by Breast Cancer Now, and they helped to deliver a personalized exercise program that used pedometers to help measure step count. And the study took 414 women between the ages of 50 and 70 who were attending their regular breast screening appointment and split them into two groups. One group received the program, whereas the other didn't. Mm-hmm. And all participants were weighed at the start at 12 weeks and at 12 months to assess what changes there were to body weight and step count over 12 months. And their group found that the average weight loss at 1 month was 2.5 kilograms in the group that received the program, in comparison to the group who did not receive the program, who on average lost 1.2 kilograms. And they found that when they continued to monitor this, the weight loss continued between 12 weeks and 12 months, even when the support was given over the phone. So it shows that these kind of personalized exercise programs are a really effective way to help support women to maintain weight loss. So it's, you know, there's a lot of evidence that weight loss of around like 2 to 4.5 kilograms is associated with an 18% lower risk of breast cancer.
Wow. Okay.
Which highlights that, you know, small but sustained changes in body weight can make a significant impact. And I think the biggest barrier with maintaining weight loss is always not having the support to do that.
Mm.
And sometimes having someone like a volunteer coach who can help provide a, you know, an exercise program that otherwise somebody wouldn't have access to is a really powerful way to empower women and make sure that they do have the support to kind of be able to take control. And you know, I think these are really powerful studies that moving forward are going to have a massive part of prevention in breast cancer.
Mm. I think that's really important to mention as well, because this study demonstrated that it was actually a small amount of weight that was lost, and it wasn't as if the people involved in this program, the participants, were doing any extreme exercise. I believe it was actually just walking, wasn't it?
Yeah. Increasing step count, which it kind of goes under the radar of how effective walking is at losing weight.
Yeah, absolutely. And do we have any hopes or plans at the moment of how we can use the results of this study going forward?
Yeah, so as we said, you know, this study provides really important evidence that weight management programs like ActWell can help double the likelihood of weight loss that could help decrease the risk of breast cancer. But I think also it's a really excellent example of collaboration between volunteers, charity and academics, and highlights how important it is to come together and get these groups from all different backgrounds to find new ways to help prevent breast cancer and support women in that area.
Yeah, brilliant. Thank you. So that's kind of the prevention element that we've covered, which is just as important, perhaps even more important than treatment. But in the last few months, we've also published news of a study which found that a new type of drug could treat breast cancer by targeting certain proteins. Could you break that down a little bit for us?
This class of drug targets a protein called MCL1. And this is a protein which researchers have found is frequently found in high levels in breast cancer cells.
Mm-hmm.
And it's involved in a process called apoptosis, a really catchy name.
Mm-hmm.
And apoptosis is this like natural process that our cells go through, which is when they die, when they sense something's wrong. So say a cell had like quite bad damage to its DNA,
mm-hmm.
Which is one of the things that kind of leads to cancer. There's a mechanism within a cell that kind of switches and tells the cell to kill itself.
Mm-hmm.
So this is a really normal thing that happens in the body when we're actually developing in the womb. What happens is our fingers are fused together. We're just like kind of, we don't have fingers. And what happens is the cells in between naturally a program to die so that we can form fingers, you know, just to highlight how natural that process is. And this is often the first line of defense against cancer. But sometimes cancer evades this process, and that's unfortunately how, you know, cancer develops. But the way that MCL works is it's actually an anti-apoptosis protein. Its role normally is to block apoptosis, to stop it happening all the time. But when it's found in high levels, which it is in cancer cells, this means that apoptosis is being blocked more. The theory is that high levels of this protein stop this natural cell death from occurring and increase the cancer cell's ability to survive. And these drugs, these BH3 mimetics, they target MCL1, stop it from working, and then cause the apoptosis to return to how it normally works.
Okay, that's fascinating. So if I'm understanding that right, it's almost as if these cells that would normally, it sounds so dramatic, but kill themselves, that would go to sort of a natural cell death, this protein just allows that to happen in the way that it should.
Yes. So it's usually a really common thing that happens with treatments, as they target a particular protein that is gone, you know, is changed in some way, so it's no longer doing its usual function.
Mm-hmm.
And so the aim of this is to target this MCL1 and stop it from doing this function which it shouldn't normally be doing.
Mm. And so what stage is the drug currently being trialed at?
These BH3 mimetics, as they're called. They're currently in development as an anti-cancer therapy, with some entering clinical trials for certain blood cancers like leukemia.
Okay.
There's currently no clinical trials for breast cancer yet, but these studies are so important because what they do is they're a proof of concept. So this provides, you know, some really powerful evidence that these BH3 mimetics could be evaluated to see if they could be used to treat breast cancer. And this kind of research is so important going into clinical trials to give the evidence that, you know, this is definitely worth pursuing for breast cancer.
So the stage that it's at the moment, it's been proved to be successful in mice, which means is that now then about to move on to human trials?
Yep. So they found that when they targeted mice with tumours, which had high levels of this MCL1 protein, it slowed the growth of these tumours.
Mm-hmm.
So that's really powerful evidence that, okay, it's effective in mice. What's the next step? The next step is potentially clinical trials. And that would involve, you know, checking it, whether it's safe, because we have no idea if it's safe in humans. And that's a really important step with any drug development. Usually the first step is to make sure it's safe in humans, figure out what the dosage is, how much do you need to give to somebody to make sure that it has the effect that's intended. And then also it would then be using it in like a large population of people, where you would then, again, look at safety, tolerability, how effective is it, and moving forward, it then goes through, if successful, approval. And then it kind of becomes available for breast cancer patients, potentially. You know, we're not at that stage yet. It's very early days. This kind of research is just very important in the proof of concept, making sure that on a molecular level, can it target that protein? What effect does that have? Does it destroy cancer cells? Does it stop growth? And here it was exciting results that these BH3 mimetics do target this protein and reduce the growth of these cancer cells.
Mm. Yeah, that sounds really positive. So theoretically then, if this does, pass these tests of being safe within human beings, how might this treatment one day be useful to people with a breast cancer diagnosis? Would it be used for primary or secondary? Or indeed, would it be useful for both those categories of patients?
It's far too early to tell, I would say, at this stage.
Yeah.
One thing that would be, an interesting concept, which, you know, this study doesn't have that information, but it would be that if we could look at people and be like, oh, in their breast cancer tumor, they have high levels of this MCL1 protein.
Mm-hmm.
Theoretically, you could be like, oh, this BH3 mimetics could be used to treat them.
Mm-hmm.
But it's just too far early days. This research is so important, a proof of concept. Like, does this work? Is it an avenue that we should pursue? But it's too early to tell really how it would actually be used to treat breast cancer. Research is a step-by-step process, and it's just about building the blocks of knowledge, and this provides the knowledge which we can build upon and understand further how these drugs could be used to treat breast cancer. So those would be the next steps, and whether there are groups within these patients who could benefit from them more, at what stage they should be given, would they be more effective if combined with other treatments. These are the kind of questions that the researchers will endeavor to answer in the future.
Right. Okay. And like you say, it's obviously so important to take it step by step. That's why these studies do take such a long time, is because they have to be vetted at every step, just to make sure that they're safe and they're effective. And I think sometimes, from the outside, people may find it a bit frustrating that, certain drugs are still in a trial stage or available in some formats and not in others, but as you've just explained, it is a long process, and it is even when it's still at this proof of concept stage, it's just vital to get the fine details ironed out before moving on to anything bigger.
Absolutely. The central thing is it's about making sure these treatments are safe, making sure they're effective, and it's a very long, complicated process, and I can completely understand why it would be frustrating, but these studies are so in depth and so there's so much care put into them to make sure that they're accurate, effective, you know, that the results are reliable. And that's what that's the central part of scientific research, is making sure that these results are accurate, so that the scientific community, it's all about collaboration, so that people can look at these results and be like, wow, that's amazing. I can use that in my work to build upon that.
Yeah, of course. And so we've covered the treatment side of things, but obviously there's also a lot of care goes into, or a lot of care is needed to go into, people that have had their diagnosis and have had treatment and are now perhaps on the other side of that. So let's talk a little bit about a study that recently came out that showed the benefits of CBT for women who are experiencing menopausal symptoms. Tell us a little bit about that. What did that study find?
Yeah, so this was a really exciting study, really important. So breast cancer treatments such as chemotherapy and hormone therapy can cause what we call menopausal symptoms. Mm. Common menopausal symptoms can include things like hot flushes, night sweats, changes to sex drive, mood changes, difficulty sleeping, anxiety, memory and concentration problems. And as you can imagine, that has a dramatic impact on somebody's quality of life. And that's very difficult to live with on a day-to-day basis. And so this study kind of was aimed at finding a way to help women experiencing these symptoms manage them, so that this could improve their quality of life on a day-to-day basis. And it's thought that hot flushes and night sweats affect up to 85% of women after breast cancer. And this can have a significant impact on quality of life, including things like personal relationships and work. And these symptoms actually tend to be worse than those experienced during natural menopause. And usually, you know, during the natural menopause, many women are given HRT, but unfortunately, this can't be given. This isn't recommended to be given to these women, because it actually increases the chance of breast cancer coming back. So it's really, really important that we find new ways to support women and offer them a way to effectively manage these symptoms after breast cancer.
Yeah, of course. Could you dig in a bit more to explaining actually what is CBT, so cognitive behavioral therapy, and how has it proven to be effective, perhaps not just in this particular study, but indeed in like existing practice?
So cognitive behavioral therapy is like a talking therapy, and it focuses on how thoughts and beliefs and attitudes can affect feelings and behaviors. So more specifically, it's like thinking about negative thinking patterns and behaviors that cause difficulty, as well as, like in this case, addressing the perception of symptoms. So in previous research, it's been shown that CBT can help cope with menopausal symptoms, both for women going through the natural menopause and women with breast cancer. And this particular study, called MENOS4, was specifically looking at whether group CBT sessions delivered by breast cancer nurses could work to support these women with breast cancer and help alleviate these symptoms. And you know, the results were really impressive. They found a 46% reduction in menopausal symptoms compared to standard care, which was 15%. And the frequency of symptoms was also reduced. So with the CBT group, they saw a 28% reduction in symptoms at 26 weeks, compared to an 11% in the control group. And as well as that, they also found that the CBT was effective at helping to improve things like sleep, depression, anxiety, and just general quality of life.
And clearly, when you read out those statistics of how effective it's been and how many women are affected by menopausal symptoms, it's clear that this is really important to pursue. Was it younger women? Was it a range of ages? I suppose these kinds of studies must be quite broad.
The trial had 127 women over the age of 16 with primary breast cancer, or BCIS, who've completed a primary treatment and experienced 7 or more hot flushes or night sweats a week. Half of the women were randomly selected to receive this group CBT session, and the other half received standard care. But since there isn't really like an overall kind of standard of care in the UK for helping with breast cancer related menopausal symptoms, so they just receive whatever their hospital offers as standard, which was usually a consultation if they request it, which I guess highlights that this is why it's such important work, because, you know, there needs to be a consistent service that is offered to women experiencing these symptoms so they can be supported to manage them. Because, you know, it does dramatically affect people's quality of life. And that's sometimes something that gets massively overlooked in breast cancer, is it's not just about treatments, it's not just about prevention, it's also how do we support women experiencing these effects of breast cancer that are really affecting their quality of life.
Yeah. And yes, like you say, it's kind of, even with these studies, even if it might not have been primarily to look at how existing treatment is working for women, it highlights those other gaps that might need to be filled with other research projects, which I guess is helpful in so many other ways. I wonder, just to kind of round off, are there any other ongoing studies that people might be interested to hear about?
Our team is always talking about the latest breakthroughs, and there's some great work going on that we're really excited to announce that's on the horizon. You know, there's always breakthroughs coming through. And so I'd always just say, make sure you regularly look on our website, regularly look at our social media, because you know, we're constantly posting news stories about that cover the latest findings. And you know, in May we've been focusing on showcasing the research we fund that is looking at triple negative breast cancer. There's some really amazing research that we're funding in that area, and we'll also be joining two of our researchers in a Facebook Live whose work is focused on triple negative breast cancer, and I'll be having what will be, I'm sure, a very interesting chat about their work, so make sure you tune into that. In June we'll be looking at what role genes and proteins play in breast cancer, so make sure you keep an eye out for all the content we'll be posting throughout the month, and make sure to go and check them out.
Thank you for mentioning that, Ed. As he said, you can, everyone listening can check out breastcancernow.org for more of our research updates. You can also follow us on social media, and we do share news stories of exciting new studies. Please do visit those. And thank you so much for speaking with me today, Ed.
Thank you for having me. It's a pleasure.
Thank you for listening to the Breast Cancer Now podcast. Make sure to subscribe to our channel on your preferred podcast service to hear our next episode. If you have any questions or concerns from listening today, you can find information on our research, services, and campaigning on our website at breastcancernow.org.